I believe it was Tolstoy who said that every happy family is happy in the same way, and every unhappy family is unhappy in their own way. This, I think, is the parasha toldot to the generations that turns Torah into truly a family drama, an internal family drama. And in thinking about Judy's 95th birthday Wednesday, in a family with not enough drama to be comparable to our ancestors, but every family, Jacob's included, illustrates so much about other families. And age and vitality and the generations, toldot. So I asked Judy to move up so she could hear me better, which is not so different to a very strange scene in the parasha. Of course, when Jacob deceives Isaac to receive blessing and birthright, Isaac says, "You smell like my son Esav." To which I thought, what the heck is he smelling? Because smell is actually, I think, a very distinct experience. And to say I am elder, or as we used to say in the Peace Corps, a veteran, which I'll use for the remainder of this talk, talking about veterans, and to imagine that certain senses have attenuated and certain senses remain powerful, smell is not one that deceives very easily. And likewise, connected to smell and the olfactory is our sense of taste. And Midrash notes that Isaac says to Jacob, "Bring me some savory food," which is, in the Midrash's mind, another emblem of aging, of becoming a veteran. Formerly, he's saying, "I used to enjoy sight, now I enjoy taste." Many senses, many nerves, many experiences attenuate with age, but the power of memory and connection still obtain. And the gifts of our ancestors, the gifts of our veterans, contribute mightily to who we are and community, and who we are as persons. We are all, I think, to some degree or other, influenced by our Zeta and our Bubby, our grandfather and grandmother. And the extended family, the power of an extended family, which Judy is both of a blended family and then embraced Ryan's father and their family. And that is an image, surprisingly, that our Torah understood as well. So Radak David Kimchi, writing, I think, around the 16th century, suggests that Abraham and Keturah in our Parsha, or sometime previous to our Parsha, had moved in with Keturah's children, that there was a multi-generational family in the patriarch's home, and a multi-branched family therein. And we, as a congregation, are among the lucky few, looking at quite a few multi-generational families who are all part of our community, which is not common if you go to somewhere like Chicago or Los Angeles, where populations are transient, so to speak. That's one of our strengths. The Ratner Merrills are a multi-generational family, and you can see the joy that Judy takes in watching her daughter and granddaughter lead worship. And the strength of a community, the strength of a human life, is often measured in its connectedness. And if we look, for example, at the Jewish Day School, their program of the special friends, the veterans who come to be with the young children, my son, as I pointed out, is blessed to have Sam Bailoff, 90 years his senior, who can teach him magic tricks. Well, Avishai's 5, so it's a 90-year gap. That's what I was saying, yeah. Sam is still very good at magic tricks and many other things. And the things we learn from those who precede us has sort of become a theme recently of my talks and just our communal life, the way that generations inform generations and the way that our descendants and our ancestors are intimately connected and interwoven with who we are. A colleague mentioned that if you spend your entire career at one congregation, if you're blessed, there will be three generations of people, so that when they call you, say the word rabbi, they mean a certain rabbi. And that's the power of generations, the power of continuity, the power of relationship in our community. And then, I forget who had this experience recently, but also that awareness of mortality that makes life, oddly enough, rich and powerful. If life were not finite, we would not take stock and value in what we do. And a lot of the times, those early intimations of mortality come, if not, for example, with a pet, then with, God forbid, a grandparent or another generation that precedes us. And then I know of the generation sort of in their 60s and 70s who recognize their age in their parents' age and mortality can be a very deep spiritual challenge. And that is expressed also in our parasha. So Isaac says, Vayomer, hine na zakanti, velo yadati yom moti. I have aged, I'm a veteran, and I do not know the day of my death. And Midrash has this really beautiful statement. So Rabbi Joshua, who is Korcha's son, says that when a person comes to the age of one's parents at the time of their deaths, for about 5 years before and 5 years after, he or she fears death more exceptionally. So Isaac is reasoning, if I would attain my father's years, I'm so far short of them, I don't need to worry yet. But if I'm to attain my mother's years, who lived about 50 years younger than, Sarah lived about 50 years less, fewer than Abraham, I should be a little more circumspect. Ho, I'm old, I do not know the day of my death. Which I've heard from family, friends, and colleagues, that when we reach the age of family at their deaths, or colleagues or friends at their deaths, it can be a real spiritual awakening and shake. And the sense that when one's parent precedes us in death, that we are sort of next in line. And those pains of family and mortality and the vitality of age and the attenuation of age are all parts of the spiritual development, are all part of the work we do to become fully grown, fully developed humans and Jews. And our tradition was certainly clear on the power of grandparents, children, and grandchildren. Proverbs says, "Ateret zekanim b'nei vanim, v'tiferet banim avotam." The crown of the aged is their grandchildren, and the glory of children is their parents. Judy's crown is her granddaughter, and Jenny's glory is Mary Ann, and Mary Ann's glory is Judy.
And Brian.
Well, yes, of course, yeah. And I mean, Judy also has six other kids, so we're not going to cut them out. There just only happen to be a few sitting in the front rows. And that's really, if you're blessed to have an easy family, every family has its own dysfunction, but if you're blessed to have a generally easier family, those relationships up and down can be so enriching and grounding. And that's the real joy of life. It's not achievements on a resume or successes in career or wealth or fame, but the power of intimacy and the significance that those relationships to family and friends and community give and enrich our lives. So returning to Tolstoy and the idea of happy families and unhappy families, and sort of a motif of this talk is the idea that family is, of course, both blessing and curse, which is the nature of Isaac's relationship to Jacob and Esau. There is blessing and curse within. And when Jacob will conclude the book of Genesis with his relations to his sons, there is also blessing and curse. And that's an intimate part of human relationship and certainly family. So as Rebecca prepares Jacob to unseat the birthright of Esav, and he's deeply afraid in his youth and callowness that he will be cursed the remainder of his days. And Rivka, in sort of boldness, says, "Alai kilaltecha bni, I'll take on your curse." So there's a tension between parents and children about how they might turn out. So the Tosafot, who are Rashi's descendants, more or less, say that it's something generally accepted that when children do not behave in the manner they should, it is their parents that are blamed for not bringing them up properly. What did you just say? It's your dad. It's your dad's fault? Yeah. It's your dad's. It's not, obviously not Marianne's fault. It's your dad's fault. Brian's fault is this one, and then the stuff about children being a blessing, we'll go to Marianne on that one. And the truth is a lot more complicated, that children come out of the womb their own entity. And the curse we often see, the curse we often see in them has much more to do with us. Now, the advice I never got in my youth, and I think I give to a lot of people in counseling, is if someone likes or dislikes you, unfortunately, it has a lot more to do with them than with you. And the difficulties we have with children and family have a lot more to do with us than with them. It's the things in our intimates that we see that we don't like about ourselves that cause us the most grief and hair pulling. But this broader concept that family is responsible for each other, that Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze LaZe, that all Israelites, all Jews are responsible and inmixed, entwined, that's the nature of this room. By stepping foot in a community, by having a communitarian ethos, you are taking responsibility for the wealth and poverty and welfare and harmony and disunity of those around you. That's alai kilaltecha. That's the nature of family with a small f and family with a capital F. And Sifforno notices this. Sifforno, an Italian commentator in the late medieval period or early modern period, takes this and refers to idea in Sanhedrin, which we'll get to in a couple of weeks with the last parasha of Genesis, where David entrusts Solomon with fulfilling the deeds he was not able to do, much like killing Mo Green at the Tropicana. Those last bits of the Corleone legacy, the last bits of David's legacy, the just deserts that he didn't get to mete out. And Sforno notes through Talmud that Solomon agrees to take on the spiritual curse that David would have had. We carry for each other. We carry water for each other. We carry strife and blessing. We worry on each other's behalf. We bless on each other's behalf. We think about each other. That's part of the blessing and the curse. And so now to talk from Brian to Marianne, we'll look at the good side. Obviously, Brian bequeathed to Jenny all of her problematic traits, but all the glory is Marianne's, as we've been told. So we're going to circle back to the very beginning of the parasha, known as Toldot. And it says, Ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. These are the generations of Isaac, who was son of Abraham, semicolon, Abraham, who gave birth to Isaac. So there's a rhetorical sort of inversion. Isaac is son of Abraham, and Abraham gave birth to Isaac, and it's played out even within the verb forms. So what Midrash notices is, like, that's a redundancy. If I say X is my child, we don't also need to point out that the child is, that I am X's father. It's the same thing. And it's interesting, I never understood how they do it in Arab nomenclature, but the idea of Abu Mazen, father of Mazen, and you have Ibn Ezra was a Jew, and I don't know if that's an Arabic construction, but the son of or the father of is used. But Midrash Tanhuma says that there are children who are embarrassed of their parents, and there are parents who are embarrassed by their children. God, aren't there ever. But with Abraham and Isaac, it wasn't like that. Isaac prided himself as the son of Abraham, and Abraham prided himself as the father of Isaac. So this is where it really circles back to Judy. Because would that we would have Judy's success and deep love after 95 glorious years to become a veteran and many, many years to come. To feel that intense pride in family, to quell when Jenny and Marianne and Brian lead services and read Torah and Haftarah, to see that evident. I think it's one of the best Shabbats you have is when your kids and grandkids lead worship. I know you just talk about it and talk about it. And you know, not every family is easy, and every family has its own strife. But would that we'd be blessed in the ripeness of our life to feel that kind of gratitude that Abraham and Isaac felt for each other, that Judy feels for Brian and Jenny and Marianne and her other children and descendants, and that I feel for our community and that we feel for each other, to take pride in each other's successes and to take sorrow in each other's struggles and to lift each other up and to be family, whether we are biological or not.